Welcome to a brand new episode of the ZCU Podcast, where three friends live together as secret vampires of the night. As always, I am your Nosferatu, hidden in the basement dweller, Zach.
I am the one vampire who's really bad at killing people, Zach.
And we got done watching What We Do in Shadows.
What We Do by, in the Shadows.
In the Shadows by Taika Waititi. And Steve's not here.
Nope. I've come to refer to these as just the OG cast.
The OG episodes.
Yeah, since, again, we're the OG.
Yeah, the two of us. I kicked around the idea of like, hey, Jim, you should come over.
And he lives really far away, though.
I know, he lives far now. Hey, Angelica, you should come over. You live slightly closer.
just shoot the shit with us. Why not?
Just stand around, sit there
Actually,
while we talk about a movie.
Farther today, away today. He told me he was going out to Angelica's family's ranch, which is all the way bumfuck nowhere.
Yeah, good old ranches. But so, What We Do in the Shadows is a movie I've been talking about for like the past year.
Wouldn't shut up about it, and it was not what I actually expected it to be.
I know, and that's like, that's the thing. Like, when I really like a movie, I really like a movie, and I want everyone to actually sit down and watch it. So when Kayla was over this weekend, we decided to have family movie night, and we watched the amazing documentary What We Do in the Shadows by Taika Waititi.
It was really dumb, but it was also wonderful.
It's just the perfect movie. Like, the sole premise of this movie is that there are four vampires that live together in a flat in New Zealand, and they have a documentary crew following them around for no good reason.
It's like, yeah, it's like a mockumentary, but with vampires.
And it kind of harkens back, like, that humor style of, like, how the HBO sports documentaries are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just
a lot of dry humor.
Yeah, and that's why I love it so much. Like, just the whole fact when they run into the werewolves, and then, like, they're like, oh, dude, fuck you. It's like, hey, remember, werewolves, not swearwolves. And it's just such an out there movie. And then I'm like, oh yeah, let's look at What We Do in the World, or
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Which I had no idea that's what that movie was actually about. I've never seen an actual trailer or anything for it.
Mm-hmm. But Taika Waititi has like a very certain brand of humor. Like, if you watched the Thor roommate video shorts leading up to Ragnarok, it's the same
Imagine
exact humor.
Imagine that for an hour and a half. That's yeah. Exactly what it was.
And what I love about Waititi especially is that for every movie he makes that he directs, he's in the movie also,
yeah,
playing a supporting or main character.
Was he Viago in What We Do in the Shadows?
So the main vampire.
The one that's terrible at killing people.
There's a scene where he's like, he's laying out like towels and newspaper, so when he bites
everywhere
into her, the couch won't turn red again. It's like, oh yeah, the red couch. The couch used to be white, guys. What the hell? Put some paper towels down.
It's not that hot.
Just hits her in the main artery. It's just like, oh god, not again.
Oh no, oh no. When Nick's being chased throughout the house, he runs into her. He's happened to, again with the blood just shooting out into his mouth.
Yeah. Really, not to spoil the movie, it's just like such a great movie. And in that same vein, this weekend, Kayla and I went to go see Logan Lucky. I realized that we invited Steve like the previous day, and then we just forgot to mention it to you as soon as Steve said he couldn't go. And I'm like, oh crap, we forgot to tell Zach.
Yeah.
You know, as we bought the tickets in front of you. But if you're a fan of like the Ocean's films, it's the same director. And it plays out like a Southern hillbilly version of the Ocean's movies. It's so freaking good. But my favorite thing about that movie is that the writer, Rebecca Blunt, doesn't exist.
What?
Yeah.
Is it a like a stage name?
And that's what people are thinking. It's like, oh, it's a pseudonym. But for you to be working in Hollywood, especially with certain studios, you have to actually register your pseudonym with the Writers Guild of America.
Hmm.
There was no press junket for this movie, and that's why a lot of people just never heard of it. But
I saw like a couple TV, or not TV ads, but like YouTube ads for it.
I didn't even see ads. I don't watch ads. YouTube Red. But like the only reason I watched it was another podcast was talking about how Logan Lucky was better than Dunkirk, and Dunkirk was overrated. Which is, I'm like, Dunkirk's not an overrated movie. But I can see your approach of liking one brand of humor over, you know,
humor,
the depressing style of war.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dunkirk is a visual masterpiece. And it, like, in terms of, like, kind of like a, like, the, when you think of, like, cinematic, like, experiences, I think of Dunkirk. Logan Lucky's like, oh, you want to go in there for the story and the characters.
You want to go in there for popcorn and
and just fun and ridiculousness.
So my favorite part of this movie, other than the writer that may not exist because, you know, whatever.
Which is weird, but okay.
Well, it's like, when you think of the director, I think Soderbergh is his name.
Yeah, Soderbergh.
He did the Ocean's Trilogy, retired, came back, did Magic Mike, and then Logan Lucky. And it's like, how did the guy who did Magic Mike and Magic Mike do this movie? I totally didn't know who he was based off of like the Ocean's films. But my favorite part of that movie, there's a prison riot and the prisoners like tape up the guards and the warden is sitting there trying to buy into their demands. And he says, all right, we are going to purchase a copy of Dance with Dragons for the library. However, Winds of Winter in the next book is not available yet. And one of the prisoners is like, man, that's bullshit. When I got transferred from federal, this dude was telling me what was going to happen in the next book. And it's like, we have reached the point where the TV show has overtaken the books. And then the prisoner's like, there's a TV show? What the fuck? And he's like, look, George R. R. Martin's press tour is very busy and that's been interfering with his publishing schedule. And the prisoners are like, what the fuck, man? Like, it's a 3-minute scene.
Stupid, like,
of just the best dry humor, just dragging George R. R. Martin down. It was amazing. And like, Kayla and I were probably laughed the hardest in the entire theater. There were like two people next to us that kept fucking talking throughout the movie.
All the worst.
So when I refilled my popcorn, man. I told
them. If you were at the Alamo, they would have kicked them out.
Yeah, just throw a card up. When I refilled my popcorn, I told the person, I'm like, hey, there's these people in seats 9 and 10 that won't stop talking. I don't know what you're able to do about it, but can I get a refill of my popcorn? Someone did come and talk to them. But, yay. Zach, for the Alamo, we can get clown costumes and then go see the private screening of It.
No, I'm not doing it. I don't want to see It.
It's gonna be such a good movie.
Oh, I don't want to watch them float down there.
We all float.
No.
You'll float too. Oh, it's such a great thing. I can't wait. Skarsgård looks like he's gonna do an amazing job.
It looks like pure nightmare fuel. Exactly.
Speaking of the opposite of nightmare fuel, you know, hopes, dreams, and amazingness. Dick Grayson has been cast for the Titans TV series. Thank God it's not Drake Bell.
There was no ass shots either. So how do we know if it's going to be a good casting or not?
So Brenton Thwaites is cast as Dick Grayson in the Greg Berlanti / Jeff Johns produced Titans TV series. But it's like weird because we don't know where in the timeline this falls into. Like, is he going to be Robin? Is he going to be Nightwing? Do we get flashbacks because it's a Berlanti show of him being as Robin? And it's like, I'm going to pave my own path, Batman.
We're like inching closer and closer to them actually bringing Batman into the CW like TV verse.
Yeah. And it's so neat. Like,
it's like, how would you even do flashbacks with Dick Grayson without Batman there in some capacity? It's very hard.
Just scenes of his family getting murdered,
Barb, Alfred.
But like, they revealed the cast, so it's gonna be Dick Grayson in some capacity, Starfire, Raven, and then they also cast, or at least they announced, that Hawk and Dove are gonna be in the TV show. So I think this goes back to a joke we made when we first started the show of it being like Dick Grayson and the birds.
Yeah.
Like, those were the original rumors. And it's like, how the fuck are you going to cast Hawk and Dove but not give Garth or even Wally, you know, some of the OG Titans? Mm-hmm. I understand not doing Arsenal just because of the Arrowverse.
Well, yeah, and I see them not doing Wally because of Flash.
Exactly. Like, so it's like, that. But Garth.
Too much CGI.
Yeah.
their budget's going into Starfire and her fire hair. And she better have fucking fire hair or I'm going to be upset.
Oh, just like how Medusa has.
God.
Whatever the fuck is.
That's no.
Spaghetti?
Yeah, like mama spaghetti.
But hey, the CGI wasn't finished for the Comic-Con trailer. Then why release it?
Don't show that then.
Don't show it.
It's her Medusa's most iconic like thing about her, other than being Queen of the Inhumans.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things, I think it was Nicola Scott or Gail Simone who started on Twitter, was the Dick Grayson casting. It was just profiles of butts. Ass
shots. It was Nicola Scott.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things is Nicola Scott was like, okay, but where's the Nightwing casting? # And then I think, because that was like the most important thing. Like even on Reddit it was like, I don't know who this is, but like,
what is his ass?
The
look
first
like?
Thought was, my first thought was like, great, where's his ass? It's like, I'm happy that I got the casting and everything else. And I think it was Colton Haynes who played Arsenal or Red Arrow, wherever the fuck he was on Arrow. He actually mentioned that his suit had extra padding to help him make him look actually more muscular. And he actually had more butt padding for those scenes where he had to do his parkour things with Ollie around the city. So I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And then you have, like, you know, Barry's outfit, which is just, like, super sleek. And then there is some padding in the butt to make him look good.
Do some damn squats, people.
Yeah. Squats and MeUndies make the world go around. So that's cool. Like, I'm glad it's we're like inching closer. Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really cared about DC TV much lately just because there's so much of it. And I'm like... Mm-hmm. It all kind of looks the same to me. There's some menacing villain the whole season. Shit sometimes goes down. Two. Somebody lies.
The CW lie. Two.
I don't know. I'm just kind of burned down on that whole process they've gone through.
That's fair.
Like every single season.
But I mean, hey, Riverdale. it's so much Berlanti's MO because even,
yeah,
you know, he touched Riverdale and they're, you know, to make it like a drama for teenagers, it's like, oh, there's the lie, but the overarching plot of who killed Jason Blossom. And now there's the overarching story for season two of who shot Archie's father at the literally the last 5 minutes of the episode.
And isn't there the whole like maple syrup family debacle?
Well, the maple syrup family was that they were transporting drugs.
Right.
Yeah, there was cocaine in the maple syrup boxes.
Why not just straighten the maple syrup?
I don't know, man.
It's the perfect
Gotta
plan.
Scratch that itch.
Man, remember, I just really want some waffles right
remember
now.
Like back in the day when heist movies are like, let's go steal those CD or DVD VCRs. And now you...
Fast and Furious.
God. It's been so crazy. But... I feel like this show, Titans especially, even though it's another Berlanti run show, might have a bigger appeal just because it's going to be like the mainstay for DC's streaming service. I mean, they tried to do the CWC. They have the Vixen TV show that's like 6 minutes an episode, Constantine. But for them to launch the web service with Titans in Young Justice Season 3, like... They have the opportunity to do some more mature and darker things. Like, one of my students came up to me and was like, yeah, they took off Young Justice off Netflix again, so I'm waiting for it to come back. But, you know, they're going to do season 3 on, like, this other platform, so I don't know how I'm going to be able to watch it. Plus, it's going to be, like, darker or something. My mom might not let me watch it. I'm like, it'll be great. It's
was
a cartoon.
It not dark enough?
Yeah. Shout out to Darkseid.
I mean, we witnessed a character quote unquote die in the first episode of season 2. Like, they didn't even like shy away from it. It's like, oh no, she dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you play the video game and you see Tula die, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, there she goes. She's gone forever. But I'm excited. Like, Young Justice, just Weisman stuff is so good. Yep. And
it's man, we're getting there. And when's that supposed to come out? Like 2018. Sometime next year.
I think Greg Weisman did a Twitter thing. He said like 5 episodes were done, 12 scripts were written, and they're currently being animated right now. So
woo.
There's a lot of cool stuff. And, you know, hey, DC, digital first series, please. Maybe. Who knows? Teen Titans Go as a comic still exists for some reason.
It's got to be successful. Like, if people don't watch it, we're fucked. That's it. That's going to be the end of Young Justice after that.
Shout out to Powerless. Oh, wait.
Because, like, people clamored for more Young Justice for fucking years. And if you people don't watch it,
legally,
you're just going to screw yourselves.
If you don't sign up for this streaming service and watch all the episodes legally, we're going to have another shit storm of like every other popular TV series that went away.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm a stickler for watching everything legally. Screw you, pirates.
Yeah, just because you want to watch it means if you don't do it legally, then the studio has no idea that you watched it, so... Unless you're buying their merch, then they're not
Vote
making any money.
With your wallet. Vote with your wallet. And then there's bands like Iron Maiden. It's like, all right, we see the highest downloads of our music illegally in Denver, so we're going to have a concert in Denver.
Really?
Yeah. Iron Maiden's PR team actually keeps track of all of the illegal downloads of their music when a new album gets released, and they plan their tour dates around that.
That's interesting.
With the hope of selling tickets and merchandise.
Right. I mean, that's how most bands make their money anyway. That's why they're on tour, like, almost the entire year.
Contortionist. Yeah, it was fascinating when I heard that. So.
I mean, even with, like, streaming services, they only make so much from that.
Yeah. On that same note, Star Wars Rebels, the final season, season 4, drops a new trailer that I haven't watched yet because I don't want to spoil it for myself. But, hour-long episode, Monday, October 16th. I think Steve's home. I'll go text him.
Oh, God. I'll just plug that back
do,
in.
Do, 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 do,
hope
do,
this doesn't
do.
Fuck anything up.
So we're in the basement where we record, and we can hear someone walking upstairs.
And we hope it's Steve.
Yep. Oh, God. Vamping with two people. I don't want to see Rebels go. Is my biggest thing.
I feel like it went away. It like came and then it's already going to be gone so quick, even though it's been 4 years since it started.
Yeah, like it came at right after. I feel like Clone Wars went on forever. But
yeah,
that was only
really.
Five seasons.
Are the seasons shorter? Is that why?
I don't know. But Clone Wars had like really long seasons occasionally.
It
like,
was like 26 episodes, I think.
Yeah. Because that show sold so much merchandise at when it first started. And now Rebels is coming in with their swan song on October 16th for the Disney XD and Disney XD app. There's a new trailer. And then apparently, according to CBR, is that the new trailer promises a lot of action as the story continues to tie in with the original Star Wars trilogy and its prequel, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. So... Season 4 picks up with the Ghost Crew joining the Rebel Alliance to take on the Galactic Empire. Great metal band, by the way, signed by Sumerian Records. The trailer teases a new Imperial threat arising on Lothal, which encourages Ezra to lead the crew back to his homeworld to take on the forces of Grand Admiral Thrawn as the Empire's grip on the galaxy continues to strengthen. And we finally get goddamn X-Wings. I waited so long.
So the reason it feels like Rebels is so short is they only have 59 episodes right now without season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Clone Wars had 121 across 6 seasons. Damn. But what's weird is they have, for seasons 2 and 3, they each had 22 episodes. Mm-hmm. But season 1 only had 15.
I think it was because it was like their little test to see if it worked.
Right. But I mean, Clone Wars only had 13 episodes in the last season, so...
Clone Wars also had a movie.
That's true.
That we don't speak about. It was really bad.
I don't even remember it.
It was when we first got introduced to Ahsoka and Zero the Hutt, a.k.a. Stinky.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember
that. There's that knowledge. And what's crazy, too, like, I assume Disney dropped this with, you know, the announcement of Force Friday being at Target and everywhere else this weekend. And I feel like there was actually still Star Wars merch everywhere when I went to Target this weekend. And I felt like last year, or when Force Awakens came out, like, everything was sold out everywhere. Like, you had to go online and find scalpers. But, like, I'm like, oh, shit, a Porg Funko Pop. Oh, shit, a Porg a Funko plushie. Oh, shit, a chest-sized Porg plushie. And I'm like, well, shit, man.
They pretty much took the not bad face. Just the...
It's so cute! So, Steve has arrived. We're going to unmute him once he sets up his microphone. You probably might want to mute him still. But we're talking about Porg.
You ruined the mystique of me showing up.
Well, we could hear you upstairs.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But we had a little commentary about
it. You ruined it for the audience.
What audience? I'm kidding. We love you. I say it every episode. It's true. But we were talking about Force Friday and like how this year kind of seemed lackluster with like all the new release of toys.
It seemed more like Porg Day than anything.
Yeah.
It's the new Ewok.
Like, I know they released more of like the Black Series, but just when you were at Target, you're like, Porg Pop, Porg, Porg, Porg.
He's our savior.
I'm like, I know I saw like five
of the Black figures. I really hope he's secretly evil.
Well, Snoke's the crazy like thing pet. Is when the I saw the Chewbacca Funko for the new movie, and he's holding a Porg in the size in the palm of his hand. So they're supposed to be small. Rachel, our good buddy, who said that she thinks they're actually CGI overlays on top of the puffins that are on the island where Luke is training Rey. I'm like, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
And one sneaks back with them.
Yeah, it's a new sidekick character. But when I was at Target, they had a bunch of the Black Series. So they had like that one. They have new Imperial Guards. There's a Hera Syndulla Black Series figure.
Really?
Yeah, this is like the first time I've seen an animated character have a Black Series character.
Right, but is it because she might be coming into the movies?
I mean, they referenced her once?
Yeah, they referenced her in Rogue One, but could she be making like her live action appearance?
But it's her Clone Wars costume. Or not, it's her Rebels costume.
Well, yeah, she could still have the same costume from
But she would have been aged so much. Because she's like a 20-something. So okay, it was
30, maybe.
Well, Twi'leks.
Well, yeah, does her race age like that? Because you have the Master Jedi. Well, we've seen Bib
Fortuna.
Right, but you've had the Master Jedi, who was the same race, who I'm assuming would have been older, probably about the same age that Hera would have been.
That's fair.
But she wasn't Alice really...
Sakura is her name.
She wasn't showing the age that, like, a human would.
Yeah.
Or whatever the humans are.
See, what I figure is just that it seems like Season 4 of Rebels is so much more of Hera's story than Kanan and Ezra anymore.
I think with the wrap-up of Maul, that kind of closed their main part of the story.
Right.
And, like, this is more of, like, the Rebellion side, which Hera is more of the Rebellion side of the Ghost Squadron.
And before you walked down, we were talking about how this season, they're going back to Lothal to fight Thawne.
So, in Rebels, Hera is 24.
Okay.
So, that would make her 30s in... 30s, 40s in The Force Awakens?
Probably in her 50s, if that. Because Awakens takes place, I want to say almost 40 years after A New Hope, but I'm not sure. Let me look that up. Someone's probably shouting at us. It's like, you idiots, it's been this long.
It's Rachel yelling at us.
She wouldn't call us idiots.
Well, you see, actually. What year does The Force Awakens? No, I don't want to know when it was released. I know it was released in 2015.
Why the hell does the wiki not have her race on here?
She's a Twi'lek.
It doesn't. Oh, there is.
There we go. When does Star Wars Force Awakens take place chronologically? 30 years after Return of the Jedi. So she'd be in her 50s then.
Actually, 34 years from about Battle of Yavin.
So she's old as fuck then.
No, she'd be like 60 or 58.
Yeah, she'd be creeping up on her 60s, but... Again, how long do the Twi'leks live for?
That's what I was trying to find. Like, how old do they have?
Like I said, we've seen Bib Fortuna.
If they're like Twi'lek. The space half-elves, or the space elves that live for thousands of years.
All right, Wiki, don't fail me now.
I don't know how much of that's canon anymore.
Who knows?
Speaking of Star Wars, though, I had like an amazing idea for a D&D campaign involving Star Wars characters.
There are actual Star Wars modules for tabletop yeah. games.
And there's also actually, the Star Wars RPG.
Yeah, Brian Judy used to said he when he was younger he played Star Wars tabletop.
Nice.
And he made his character broken because in classic him fashion, he found a loophole to exploit. And made his character fucking broken.
Sounds fair.
There is no information on how long they live.
Because none of them will live long enough to find out.
Oh.
Like I said, I'm going to keep going back to Bit Fortuna. He is a Twi'lek. It's just like he's old as all hell. But hey.
This is before Disney bought it. So looks like pretty much the same lifespan as like human.
Okay.
So she'd just be old as fuck.
Even so, I mean, you look at Bit Fortuna. Yeah, he kind of has some age to him, but he's probably like the late age of a Twi'lek.
Fair game.
She's probably not going to be in the main movies. It'd just be cool if they did that.
Yeah.
Like, they've acknowledged that the animated series is canon, so if they just made it full canon and just had her, like, at the table going over plans to take on the First Empire.
Mm-hmm.
First Order, that one.
My hope, dream, and probably will never come true is that when we eventually do get flashbacks to Luke's Jedi school and everything else, you see Kanan in a master's chair.
Or Ezra walking by training Padawans.
And then we get like a little...
And then you watch Ezra die.
And then you get a little stick figure of Anakin to sit in the master's chair. He's finally granted the rank of master and a seat on the council.
It's just a pile of ashes. It's like, here you go, Anakin.
But let me say, like, after watching Logan Lucky, I'm so excited to see Adam Driver back as Kylo Ren. Like, his character in Logan Lucky is freaking impossible. Like, he's just so simple-minded, and he's missing a hand. So Kayla and I, of course, made the joke. It's like, man, that Skywalker family, and they're missing limbs, right? He has the prosthetic hand.
The prosthetic.
It's actually a Protestant hand. He wards off evil.
It's a cross.
Do you think Kylo will lose a limb sometime in this movie? Because you think about it.
It's the middle movie.
Yeah, Anakin lost his hand.
They could break the cycle of the hero losing a limb.
Well, Anakin lost his hand in 2. Luke lost his hand in
Empire.
And now we're getting on the second movie of this trilogy. A Skywalker could lose a hand.
I mean, the meme was already made of Rey's surprise face. Like, oh god, am I going to lose a hand now?
And also, we have the unlucky Jedi protagonists. Someone like Kanan, who lost his eyesight in the second season of Rebels. So there's just...
Boy, howdy, Star Wars just hates 2s, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like, second one, you gotta make it a little darker. But let's add Porg.
What's that? We're on the odd number movie of the series. Gotta lose something.
You mean even?
Oh yeah, when I even.
Well, Empire's yeah, that doesn't work.
Empire's 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
this would be 7.
We're on 8.
8. Yes. 8.
Yes.
I can't count.
I can't either.
It's late. I don't teach math. But, God. So excited for freaking Last Jedi. I told Kayla,
I forgot it comes out this year.
I'm gonna pull a Joe. Our good friend Joe. And if there's a trailer for any Star Wars movies other than the first one, I'm walking out of the theater until it's over.
Said I'm going to avoid any Star Wars trailers from here on out. Like, I want to keep it as pure and simple as possible.
So let's see. We got Justice League, Thor, Star Wars.
It.
No.
Justice League and Thor, I don't have... Like, the comic book movies, I don't have as much of a thing with not watching the trailers. Because half the time they're just...
We kind of know what to expect.
Yeah. Well, the Thor trailer probably already ruined the movie because we see Thor covered in lightning. It's like, Mjolnir was inside of him all along, just like the friendship.
See, I just see that as he's the god of thunder. He's summoning lightning and thunder.
He forgot he could do that.
I was going to say, he did it in Avengers and didn't do it again.
Too much CGI. But like... I'm on the boat where I'm more excited for like solo superhero movies than the team ups because I'm like, oh yeah, the team up. I'm going to like shake when I see all the Justice League together on the screen. I'm like, oh my God, it's actually happening. But looking out into the future, I was like so much more hyped for Wonder Woman when it came out than Justice League or even Batman versus Superman. You know, I was more excited because I'm like, oh my God, it's a new Batman. It's Ben Affleck. Oh my God, what are we going to do? And then it's like, oh, Doomsday is in this movie. Fuck!
Ow.
Sorry.
That really hurts.
I tried to turn.
That one got echo in there.
I can echo.
It's literally dink.
I heard some reverb.
No, that's Cisco's evil brother.
Oh, Lord, that hurt.
Sorry.
These headphones are sensitive.
You're sensitive.
And the ears.
But like, yeah, superhero movies, I know what to expect at this point. So trailers don't really ruin much for me anymore. It's like, oh, it's a guy fighting a villain. And there's going to be some trickery. Oh, it's that it connects to the Avengers or Justice League? Neat. Meanwhile, Star Wars, this is brand new territory.
They kept it really under wraps this time, too.
Like, this is completely untapped territory.
Well, when you have the Scottish Navy surrounding the island that you're trying to film a Star Wars scene at, that's pretty intense, right? I'm still literally curious because we still haven't seen Finn at all, like, other than him and his little tube.
I haven't seen him walking yet. I thought there was a quick clip of him.
I don't know.
I haven't watched the new trailer, so I couldn't tell you. But
I have not watched the new trailer.
I can't remember.
And then they've also dropped his pop, but his pop is him in a First Order outfit. So he's either undercover or I'm assuming he's undercover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's no way they'd be like, yeah, come on back to the First Order. We'll make you an officer now, too.
Thanks for betraying that rebel scum.
What's that? You helped blow up Starkiller Base? Eh.
Like,
shit
other
happens.
Than Porg and I think BB-9E, those are the only new characters I know, and I want to keep it that way. And same with, like, Snoke and his pop figure of him going out in his bathrobe, getting the morning newspaper. Like, I don't want to see
creepy.
Anything about that like until I watch the movie.
Yeah, I'm okay with, like, seeing theories every now and again, but I don't want anything like, well, after seeing the new trailer released on Force Friday, I can create this theory. Nope, get out.
Leave, we don't
it's
want
like
this right now.
It's like me when I watch the trailer in slow motion and I'm like piecing things together. Also, the new variant cover for Doomsday, or not Doomsday Clock, but the Oz Effect, it's the Gary Frank cover and it shows Superman and then another figure side by side holding the Earth. So it's like, yeah, that's Jor-El. I mean, there's nothing else. But apparently there was like an evil clone of Clark. It was his uncle. Like, I can't remember his name. It was like Mazel or something like that. So people are thinking it's like, oh, Mr. Oz is actually his uncle back from the Silver Age that went back to Earth and told Superboy Clark that he was split from him from Red Kryptonite and then tried to kill him. And it's like, or it's Jor-El.
Really obscure.
Or it's Jor-El.
Was it you who sent us the one about how Mr. Oz could be Papa Kent?
Yeah.
And he went with Mr. Oz because we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah.
Like that seems very convoluted, but I would kind of applaud them a little if they did that.
God. It just like, I know all of the entirety of the Rebirth event is just like reaching into the abyss of like characters and everything. It's like, this D-lister will do.
Yeah, like the Hyper Adapter.
Hyper Adapter is not a B-list character.
Hasn't been around since Final Crisis, though.
He's been around. He's been influencing everything in Gotham this entire time, according to Grant Morrison. Barbados, man. He actually popped up in Nightwing during the Mr. Pig arc.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
With Dr.
Barbados?
Hurt. Yeah, with Dr. Hurt. Because Dr.
I remember
Hurt,
that because of the Nth Metal.
Yeah. So when Dr. Hurt goes back to Barbados, it's like, I failed you. And we just see the giant shadowy figure of a bat. And it's like, yeah, dude, that's right. Fucking Hyper Adapter, yo. Yeah, that's just me, though. Anyways.
I think that's there's one more thing.
Oh, yeah. This crazy fucking mess.
Good Lord.
Steve, have you heard about this?
No.
All right, Zach, take it away.
I don't know what this is.
Oh, all right. So.
All right.
You know how DC did the one tick. Still doing lenticular covers for certain issues. Like,
it's the 90s.
Yeah. So, but I mean, Steve, you know how John goes about those. Like, hey, do you want the lenticular cover or the regular cover? Oh, I'll take the lenticular one. All right, cool.
I mean, who wouldn't want the Doomsday Clock one of Rorschach's face?
That one is pretty legit.
Melting into the Trinity logo.
Marvel is wow, they're really fucking comic book shops over with this one. So to break it down, they're also doing lenticular covers for Legacy. However, in order to get that, let's see, you have to order 10 regular covers, and then an additional 10 covers to hit a 200% sales level, and then you can order the lenticular covers. So if your regular customers want, let's put it this way. So if your regular customers want 10 lenticulars of Iron Man, you'd have to order 10 regular covers, an additional 10 to hit that the sales mark, and then you can get the lenticular covers that your customers wanted. So you're buying pretty much 10 or 20 extra copies that you don't have any guarantee you're going to sell.
When did we get into like a middle school sales drive? You could buy this wrapping paper here, or you can buy 10 rolls of this and get this bonus wrapping paper here. Sign here, I'll get my prize for 20 wrapping paper sold, the lenticular cover.
And just so you know, when you sell the 30 copies, the lenticular cover is still only $3.99. Because it's not even like incentive variants where it's like, oh, for every 25 issues you order, you get one of these.
Right.
It's, here's the gateway into it. You can still sell it for cover price, or you incentivize it for your store and screw over your customer.
Yeah, comicbook.com had a whole article about this, but they interviewed Brian Hibbs, who's an owner of two comic shops in San Francisco, and he says, quote, literally, you are being asked to purchase comics you can't sell in order to gain access to comics that you can. While a small handful of people are willing or able to buy multiple copies of the same insides, the largest majority of customers want a single version to buy. End quote.
So the only reason I have multiple or two different copies of Civil War II is because I wanted the regular one to read, and then because I figured I'd go back and read it at some point. Mistake on my end, but... And then I bought the Fight Night covers because I wanted to hang those because they looked awesome.
Hashtag aesthetic.
Yeah. Silly me thinking I was going to go back and read Civil War II.
It's not bad, but it's not good.
I'm mad at you. You're mad at me. Let's fight again.
Oh, dude, you just explained Secret Empire.
I've explained 90% of Marvel's events for the past 10 years.
Again, by no means do we ever want to shit on Marvel. It just sounds
what?
Okay.
When you look at like what they're doing, it's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I remember talking about it with John. I'm like, so how do you feel about these Marvel covers? It's like, I fucking hate it. Because what's going to happen is I'm going to have a goddamn long box full of all of these issues and not be able to sell them. But I'm like, at least on the bright side, these are the quote unquote number one issues. So there's going to be some resale value eventually. And it's like, yeah. Because you know what someone wants?
This reboot doesn't flop.
It's not a reboot. It's Marvel taking a brand new can of paint, painting up the dusted freaking Pontiac Firebird, and going like, look how brand new this is. No.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing with red paint instead of rust.
It's like, wow, do I want the fifth number one of Miss Marvel?
Fuck no. That's dumb.
Do I want the 16th number one of Thor right before Thor 700 comes out? No.
But hey, look at it this way. If you take this title and this title and this title and this title, it all adds up. Like, whoever is running Marvel's PR or like the editorial over there, it's like, wow, DC did this for Action Comics and Detective. We should try it. Well, Action and Detective have a long-running thing.
I was going to say, they got their numbers from Action and Detective only. They'd be like, all right, we've had Detective. How many Batman series have we had? All right, how many books does that equal up to? All right, add that to Detective's run.
Oh, wait, don't forget Dark Knight and Legends of the Dark Knight, so we can add those numbers, so we're already past 1,000.
Do we want to throw Dark Knight Returns in there? Okay, let's do it.
Even though there's nothing to do with it. They're literally doing that with Ultimates. It's like, let's take the other universe titled book and add this to this new run of Ultimates that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Whoa. Batman showed up in a picture in this one? Add the whole series to the number.
Again, this is my favorite thing that I posted this on Reddit. I'm like, look, I like Iron Man. Or no, not Iron Man. I like Iron Fist. Iron Fist is a fun story. I trade weight for it. But I fear for the poor soul that just got done watching Defenders. Goes out to their comic book shop, gets Iron Fist 1 through 7, and then the next issue they pick up is issue 76.
Because it's also taking into account Iron Fist and Luke Cage, or Iron Fist and Power Man, or Heroes for Hire.
No,
or...
those go into the Luke Cage series.
Oh, they don't share them?
No.
So, according to the article, Marvel's the meet or exceed policy caused Marvel to slowly adjust order requirements, but a lot of the bigger titles, so the ones that people are going to really want, like Iron Man, Hulk, still have to hit that 200% ratio.
So stupid.
Yeah, that's just like, and I'm going to play devil's advocate to try and play, like, show that we're not 100% like against Marvel, even though we say we aren't. But if, when DC,
hey, I
like,
read
did their
five Marvel titles, but everything else is actually Star Wars.
When DC
I
did
read
Rebirth,
three, sorry, and one, sorry, of them, Zach. One of them is ending soon.
Right, like, not to shit on Legacy already, but when you put it the way they're just recoding everything, and you look at something with like Rebirth and like how ridiculous it. Like in metal, like how they're digging into these old school stories. Like, yeah, for the average reader, you're probably not going to understand what the hell's happening with like Hyper Adapter Barbados, like all that shit going down. But for all the people who do understand it, that's really fucking cool for them.
Yeah.
And I feel like DC's just had a better approach of how they wanted to restructure their whole universe.
Oh, for
while
sure.
Marvel's just.
You're not playing devil's advocate right now. You're just shitting on it still.
I'm trying not to shit on it. I'm trying to understand what their approach is, but
it
doesn't seem to be
clear. It seems like Marvel wants to do a back to basics thing. And especially you can see that recently with Spider-Man, because this is like one of the titles that I see is most affected by this. You have Peter Parker, who used to be a university teacher and then moved in to work for Horizon Labs and then made a name for himself, or at least Doc Ock made a name for him with Parker Industries. And then you see Peter doing all these charities and benefits and everything. But, you know, as soon as Doc Ock comes back in the picture, freaking Peter self-destructs everything and then is apparently going back to the Bugle in some way, shape, or form. So it seems as if, like, they're trying to bring things back to basics, but they're shitting on all these different storylines that happened.
It's like DC, they honestly did something similar. It's like, all right, we're going to bring back all these characters you know, but we're going to have these new stories for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and even though it's going to be, like, all right, you see these same characters, they're not going to be doing the same thing that we've seen for them do before.
Yeah, and
we're gonna try and shape it up.
One of the nice things about DC is like these characters feel familiar again. Like reading some of Robert Venditti's Flash, I'm like, this isn't really Barry. But now you have Josh Williamson, it's like, okay, this is like very Barry attitudes. Very Barry.
Yeah,
but
good smoothie.
Like
and I mean, we don't know what Legacy is gonna be. Maybe it will be like, maybe this back to basics things will work, but we haven't seen anything that makes us go, whoa, they're really making things different.
Whoa, they're killing off Jane Foster? That's different.
What? This character that you build up for so long and now she's going to die?
Granted, Jason Aaron's been working on all of this since like the Marvel Now stage back in like 2011.
Right. I honestly think that's one of the problems Marvel has is they've had the same creator on these books for so long that I feel like it's just... Even though they've had these super long stories, like I feel like they need to kind of change some things.
Yeah.
Question. When you say they're going to kill Jane Foster, like this has been confirmed that she's going to die, right?
The story arc is called The Death of Mighty Thor.
Okay.
Which is Jane Foster's title.
Right. Because I read Generations Thor.
Mm-hmm.
The Thor team up, which is actually pretty good. I'll give him that. But in the whole thing, it was Jane Foster Thor monologuing, like, do I even need to be a human anymore? It's like, I could just be Thor all the time now instead of having to be a person with cancer.
Do you remember when Thor was just Donald Blake, the crippled doctor?
Who went into a cave and discovered that he was Thor in a human's body?
Yeah.
Or he was able to use the power of Thor And then they retconned it to where he was just Thor but lost his memories.
Yeah. Well, it's like, again, I was joking around with you guys. Like, hey, I read Secret Empire 10. I didn't buy it, but I read it because one of my coworkers also reads comics. Here's how they explain Marvel Generations. Panel 1, panel 2, that's it. Kobik teleports them while monologuing, and they're back on the same page. Because it seemed like when... Again, I think it's just Marvel's PR. It's like they made Generations to be this huge thing. It's like classic superhero team-ups of the new character and the original character. I'm like, but Carol and Kamala have been around and Peter and Miles have been around. And then it's like, there's no time travel shenanigans. That's all it was.
I was going to say, literally, like, you look at the Thor one. It's like Thor, back before he actually had the hammer fighting with the axe, he apparently went to Egypt with the Vikings and fought Apocalypse. And then Jane Foster Thor just shows up and be like, oh, I traveled back in time. Neat. I'll help him fight Apocalypse.
I learned a lesson today.
Now back to my time.
Well, again, one of the things that made DC Rebirth so interesting and fascinating, not even interesting or fascinating, but like really hypey for a lot of people, was like, all right, here's the DCU era, which was kind of hit or miss. And then wrapping things up with 52. And then they do the Rebirth event and everything else. But like at WonderCon, they're like, here's the one of the things that you need to know about DC Rebirth. All new creators hitting different characters, doing different titles. And then like the announcement trailer, it's like, here's your Batman team. I'm like, oh my God, who's the Batman team? Oh my God, Scott Snyder said he's leaving Batman. Who's going to take over? Oh my God, it's Tom King. And then you move on with your life. And it's like that level of excitement was so crazy. But it's like, all right, here's 52 Marvel titles, the new 52 for Marvel, and all the same creators.
It's 53.
Okay.
There are 53 titles included in Marvel Legacy.
Sorry.
The
MU 53.
The not-so-neat 53.
But it's like...
I feel like all they're relying on is just... It feels like they're expecting people to just buy it because, hey, we're Marvel. Just do it. It just seems kind of complacent.
One of the most refreshing things for me with Marvel in like the past year, I love Amazing Spider-Man to death. I love Dan Slott. I like all of his new ideas. But when Chip Zdarsky came on to write a Spider-Man title was one of the most refreshing things ever, because it's not the same writer who's been on the book for 8 years,
right?
Which is one thing you can always hope. It's like Scott Snyder on Batman forever was amazing.
I think it works to a degree. Like, Scott Snyder with Batman, it's like he has all these ideas he wants to explore with the character, so we've seen different variations of his story being told from New 52. Like, we got to see a different Batman with Super Heavy, and now we're seeing a different Batman with All-Star.
Or like, even All-Star when he wrote Dick Grayson for Detective.
Right. Like, All-Star is more, like, it seems more like a Frank Miller, like, kind of... He's still, like, very thought, like, all of his thoughts and, like, inner monologues, like, that's very much Scott Snyder's approach to Batman, is, like, the internalization of what the character does.
It's a heavier Batman than we see in Tom King's or even Tynan's.
I don't know if Marvel did, like, an announcement for Legacy. I didn't see anything about it.
They had a very, 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 very quick announcement of, like, a picture, like, yeah. This is a thing. But Secret Empire, eh?
No, they did. Here's Marvel Legacy with Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic. And then the September solicits came out, and that was the rest of Marvel Legacy.
I was like, it's like, look, Marvel Legacy is going to happen. We're going to put it right on the end of Secret Empire. But hey, Secret Empire, eh? Eh? Fascist Captain America. Steve-el Rogers. But I will admit, the Thor Generations has piqued my interest a little bit, simply because the last two pages, not necessarily from a, ooh, I gotta see where this goes standpoint, but more of a, the fuck? So the last two pages is Odin monologuing about Thor, and then he talks about having, you know, his first love.
Great. Which was Phoenix,
yeah,
right?
It goes to the last page of that. And it's the Avengers 10,000 BC with Odin holding Mjolnir, macking on Phoenix. And so, like, the first thing that popped in my head is like, Are they going to make Thor the child of Phoenix? Like, the child of Odin and the Phoenix Force? So now I'm like, I have to read now because I'm curious.
Yeah, I think the Spider-Man one and Iron Man one might come out next week or the week after, you know, slowly building to the legacy.
Iron Man's next week.
I'm going to pick that one up just because, no matter how shitty it may get, I always love Iron Man. I'll always give it a shot. Don't fuck me over, Marvel. It's Iron Man. Don't play games with my heart.
It's your flagship.
That is my flagship Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one I will always try and go for bat for. Like, they're like, yeah, there's going to be two Iron Man titles. Sign me up.
I'm reading both of them. As soon as John told me, it's like, oh yeah, Infamous Iron Man's ending, so we don't need to renew that for you. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, when my coworker was like, it's like, yeah, they're ending Infamous Iron Man after Legacy. I'm like, no. Don't do that to me. No.
This has been like one of the most interesting Doom has been since Fantastic Four ended.
I actually like Doom. I always hated Doom because he was always so two-dimensional.
Don't say that to Tim's face.
What's that? Oh, Tim's going to hear this and we're going to have words.
He's going to be like,
but to
the
me,
fuck you say?
To me, Doom has always been so two-dimensional. What's that? A new cosmic power showed up? Here, let me grab it, fuck up the universe, realize my mistake, everything is turned back to normal, rinse and repeat.
But Dr. he helped Doom. Deliver Sue's baby.
Before or after the cosmic entity was it?
Before.
Okay.
And that was good. And then the cosmic entity
grabbed it
too.
And fucked up everything.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom, in a nutshell. At least to me. Tim, you may love him, and I know you do. I don't like Doom unless Infamous Iron Man.
I'm going to say this. For someone who's like really hyped for Marvel Legacy.
Levacy.
Please tell us why. Leviosa. Like, please tell us why, because it's hard for us to actually understand what the hype is about when Marvel doesn't seem to be doing a very good job of hyping it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, even the creators, I don't know if it's just like their NDA right now. They're not like teasing anything. Whereas you have Scott Snyder's like, hey, I don't know if I'm supposed to show this, but here.
Let's say like his, or when he called during the Metal Midnight release, he was like, yeah, here's some straight up spoilers.
Oh yeah, dude, in issue 2, Damian's doing this. I'm like, oh, Damian's in the story?
And then you have Oliver Queen making a monkey joke, and I'm like, yes.
In front of Grodd, nonetheless.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Zach said, really, if you are hyped for Legacy, tell us why. I think one of us is going to pick up Legacy issue 1.
I'll get it. Okay. I'm going to get it anyway. Like I said, after Thor, I'm curious. I'm not necessarily hyped for it. I'm just curious.
And one of the things Jason Aaron's been doing is, I think it led up to that point, but like there is the whole Marvel Shi'ar, or not Marvel, the Asgardian Shi'ar War and Mighty Thor over the Phoenix Force at one point. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. And then you say this about him macking on Phoenix. I'm like,
is baby Thor the Phoenix Force?
Is Mjolnir? Because if you go by like mythology standards, Odin shouldn't have Mjolnir.
No.
By no means.
Odin forged Mjolnir for Thor from the heart of a dying dwarf star.
And even on the hammer,
it says, if you be worthy, you will hold the power of Thor.
And even in Thor's Secret Wars, they talk about like, hey, where'd all the stars go? Well, we needed them all for Thor hammer, so sorry about that.
Well, it's like when Beta Ray Bill picks it up. He doesn't get like the armor Odin was wearing in 10,000 BC. It's literally Thor's armor.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
That's another thing. If they start bringing things back, like this go rebirth route and start plucking old things, bring Beta Ray Bill back.
He was back.
I know. Bring him back again.
Okay.
Make him a mainstay now.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to see him an unworthy Thor for 3 issues to, you know, help retrieve the War Thor hammer. But now we have Volstang as Thor also, so there's 2.5 Thors. Thor. Yeah.
Heard you like Thor.
Yeah. I hear you like the X-Men. Well, too bad.
Well, and I wound up looking through like some of those preview stuff that John got from San Diego Comic-Con, and one of them was like a Legacy preview, quote unquote. There were like one page from a couple of the first Generations books, and then like pictures of all of the returning titles, like Iron Man, number whatever
540 something.
Yeah. And it's like Tony, like the Iron Man suit busting out of a grave that says, "Here lies Tony Stark."
Because Tony Stark's comatose body went missing during Secret Empire for some reason. God damn it, Steve-el.
Or I guarantee you it was Tony Stark in an armor, took his body, he's like, "I'm a fix me. I don't like being a computer."
God, the computer Stark, I can't tell if he's supposed to be a villain or not. I'm just waiting.
Well, it was so weird. Maybe, like,
that's the point.
The first issue when, like, they get back to their secret bunker, it's like, yeah, AI Tony changed his programming to where he's drunk now.
Yeah, that was
like, I'm sorry, Empire. What?
Because that was the best Tony Stark. That's like, the only way he's coping with everything.
It's like, he changed his programming to be drunk because he couldn't cope with Steve being evil.
One of the most unsettling things happened in Invincible Iron Man, like maybe last issue, was Friday and Tony talking to each other in their physical forms, and Mary Jane just walks in watching two AI talk to each other, and she's like, "Can you guys always do that?" It's like, "Yeah, but we just manifest our physical selves for your guys' comfort. It's not like we're evil or anything." And it's like,
that's what an AI would say.
Yeah, because didn't the helmet get knocked off? He's like, "This head's only here for your comfort."
Yeah.
It's like, I could just be disembodied armor.
Oh, it's like, gosh, golly.
Pump the brakes there, Tony.
Just everyone.
That's good. Yes, AI Tony is secretly the whole one. He is the one plotting everything.
You know that what made me so mad about Secret Empire? It's that fucking Ant-Man helps save the day. Granted, Nick Spencer's been writing this event.
Don't throw out spoilers.
But Ant-Man helps save the day, and I'm like, of course he does.
Is it Scott, or is it Hank again?
It's Scott. Hank is still Ultron, and then they revived the second Ant-Man between Hank and Scott, but he was working with Taskmaster, and then there's this funny hee-hee-ha-ha moment. It's like, all right, champions, we're going to release you, because we changed sides, because the good guys are winning. All you have to do is not hit us too hard, and then Miles just webs them to the wall. And I'm like, yep.
Miles, you've done worse things to just people in a bar.
So dumb. Freaking Ant-Man saves the day. God damn. But hey, we have two Steve Rogers now. Not going to say how, but Steve-el and Steve are back for good. And Deadpool's evil.
Like, not just anti-hero, he's straight up evil.
Well, it's like in the latest issue of Deadpool that came out last week, he's working with Maria Hill. It's like, look, I got betrayed because I thought that was Steve Rogers. I thought I was doing the right thing. Why would you ever doubt Steve Rogers? And she's like, well, you killed Phil Coulson. And then Maria Hill drops a building on him. And then he's like, well, I'm going to go kill Steve-el.
And is that where it started with Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe again?
No. Also takes place in the same universe as Old Man Logan, allegedly.
Huh.
And they also fused Deadpool to Ultron, so there you go.
Oh, that's
because why neat. The fuck not?
Well, the whole thing is he has to kill the whole Marvel Universe. Duh. There is a really disturbing thing. It's that like scene from Robot Chicken where Anakin's plucking all the dandelions.
Yeah. And it's like, I left you first. Fresh flowers on the table. Oh my god.
It's Deadpool playing hide and seek with the champions, and it's like this really kiddish, cartoony, almost Scotty Young-esque scene.
Oh no.
And he's like, oh, I found you. And then after all the cartoons, it just cuts and you just see the champions lying on the ground. It's like, oh god.
Oh no.
So yeah. For someone that doesn't read Marvel, I read a lot of Marvel just because my coworkers hook me up. Yeah. I think that's everything we have to say about Marvel, like, shitting the bed. Right? Was that this discussion topic?
I don't think they shit the bed yet. Maybe they'll prove us
wrong.
Well, they're in the process.
I think they feel it brewing, and they're trying to decide if they want to get up and go to the bathroom first, or just shit the bed.
This will let it happen.
But hey, they make some darn good cookie-cutter movies. Yeah. Except for, you know,
hopefully Guardians. Yeah, hopefully Ragnarok is something different.
Well, they didn't kick Taika Waititi off the film, so it's going to be something.
It's a good start.
So after you made us watch what we do in shadows.
In the shadows.
In the shadows.
Zach corrected me earlier.
Yeah, it's what we do in the shadows.
That was just what we do in shadows.
No, what we the do shadows. In the shadows.
Are we watching Hunt for the Wilder People this weekend?
I'm not that or interested boy. In it.
Boy's pretty good. But yeah. Stu, actual IT guy, appears in almost every Taika Waititi movie now.
Huh. So is he going to be in Thor?
He's actually Beta Ray Bill, I hope. Or he's just Stu.
Yeah, he's just in the Grandmaster's little penthouse area. Like, Stu, the picture went out.
He's the one that says, werewolves, not swearwolves. And then moves on.
Thanks, Stu.
He's Fenrir.
That's perfect. All right, Zach, you brought a discussion topic.
Yes, for our table. That actually segues quite nicely into it because of what I played this week or finished this weekend. So I finished up Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, which, brief rundown of what the game is. It's a game by Ninja Theory, who have worked on Heavenly Sword, Enslaved, and Disney Infinity.
Yes.
So. It's a very small, it's like 20 or 30 people who worked on this game. And the whole plot is, Senua is a Celtic warrior who is going on this trip to the Norse underworld because her Celtic lands were invaded by Vikings and the Norse. So it's a journey of her going into this unknown territory to reclaim her husband, her beloved soul. So, but the whole thing is that she has psychosis. So the whole time you're playing the game, she's hearing voices just talk to her constantly. And the whole, it was a really cool experience just for like what it actually did, because I loved the way they designed it. All the audio is binaural. So full 3D binaural audio. Like if you turn, voices are position differently, like all the voices talking at you come at different angles. You actually get used to it after a while. It's really fascinating.
One of the listeners is actually going to point out that's not in the game.
No, 100%.
And then you're going to lose your mind.
It 100% is.
Or is it?
Well, that's actually one of the cool things with the game, is that since she isn't in the right state of mind, you don't know if what she's seeing is she actually journeying to hell and Helheim to fight Hela? To grab her, get her beloved soul back, or is she just seeing all of this?
Hella.
Yeah, Hella.
You can leave now.
But it actually does sound cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. Like, there's all this Norse mythology, like, throughout the game as collectibles, like, these, like, stone tablets you click, and it'll tell you, like, a Norse legend about, like, Odin, or Fenrir is one of the bosses you fight. But yeah, it's just this really fascinating game, and it made me think of, like, wow. This is a game that really took this idea of, like, I want to explore this idea of mental health and psychosis and explain it through a way that makes sense to a video game, because it's an unreliable narrator. The character is going through something that they don't understand. They just think it's a curse or something because of the time that she lived in like, I don't know, 1200. I can't remember when the Celts were around. I want to say like 1100. So they have no idea what mental health is. And there's even this featurette from the director and the guy who came up with the idea for the game that they added into the home screen about how, like, his whole idea was he was thinking about, like, why do we still deal with, like, mental health issues and, like, things like this? Why didn't evolution, like, wipe these things out? And his thinking was, well, evolution doesn't really view that as a negative, like just creatively viewing the world differently. So I'm like, huh, that's a really interesting thought process behind that.
It's not like it's something the whole race suffers with.
Right.
So it's not like a genetic deformity that can just be written out of humanity's code.
Right. It just got me thinking of, like, this is a game that made me realize, like, video games are fucking cool. And, like, they can tell these really intricate stories that you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell.
Sonic 2.
Fucking Sonic games.
But he's got to go fast.
That's the whole point. I totally agree with you. And as soon as I saw this, I'm like, I grabbed my phone and I'm like, all right, there's like three games that I direly need to talk about.
I want to throw out one because it might be on your list. Eternal Sonata.
No.
No? Okay.
So we can talk about it. Have you played? Oh, sorry, you're not done.
No. So my actual topic is, like, what is a piece of, like, content that made you, like, reevaluate what you view a medium can do? Like, comics, games, movies, like...
Porn.
Sure. VR okay. Porn.
4K just looks too real.
It's a little too real.
All right, Steve.
I would still say Eternal Sonata, because it, the first time I played through it, it took me a second to actually realize what the game was. Like, I didn't put two and two together the first time I played it. Thank you. Zach held up
that's a visual fingers. Joke.
But, you know, it's, you know, the game starts off in 19th century London. 20th century London.
It's the death of Chopin.
Yeah. Right?
That's why it's the Eternal Sonata.
Yeah, I'll look up Chopin's death.
So it opens up in whatever century London on the day, the very night Chopin died.
1849.
So the 19th century. So 19th century London, I think London.
Paris.
Where it's, you know, that Chopin's family gather around his bed and they're talking about how he's not really going to make it through the night. And suddenly you're in this mystical, colorful world where everyone and everything is named after something musical. And the whole dream is Frederick Chopin's dying fever dream. And it's one of those things where he doesn't realize it through 90% of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to, like, the final world that's, like, this desolate area, you realize, like, oh, this is my dream. I'm going to die unless I fight back.
Right.
Like, he winds up being the final boss, but it's one of those things, like, my God, they took everything. Like, this is a dying dream that Chopin is going through, and then he realizes his own mortality.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked about Hellblade is, like, even though you don't know that if any of what you're fighting or doing is real, it doesn't matter because it's real to the character you're playing.
Well, and that's the same thing. Is like, you know this is a fever dream, but after he dies, the world continues on.
Hmm.
And one of the big things about Eternal Sonata, I had to remind myself of the story because I haven't played this game since, like, early high school, about when it was first released. But Chopin turns into the final antagonist, realizing that this is his dream. This is his nightmare.
I just said all of that.
I know. I'm going to keep going.
I
know.
You're repeating my words.
I know. And the only way he believes for him to save the world is he has to defeat your party. And that's when you switch to Polka, last name PMO. So fucking music jokes, yo. Polka realizes that she can save the world by jumping off a cliff. And she reincarnates back into herself. She's born again and then ages back up. And at the same time, that's when Chopin realizes that same thing, the inevitability of the human condition is that you die. And yeah, like, that was really cool to me.
It's a very fascinating way to explain, because it was rated teen, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's meant for...
cartoon violence.
Yeah. So it's meant for, like, younger... it was mainly made for younger, like, Japanese children than it came to America. So it's made for the younger children, teen audience. But it's such a fascinating way to explain death and mortality to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, yes, you go through this magical, colorful world, but then at the very end you realize... I'm not immortal. This might be a world of my creation, but that still doesn't mean I can't die.
So I have two games that I really want to talk about.
It could be anything, too. It could be a comic or something as well.
I'm just thinking about games because I played two of these in the past year that really just struck a chord with me. Get it, music jokes. But there was a game called Emily is Away. It's a point-and-click adventure. And the whole thing is based around you meet this girl named Emily. She is one of your friends from high school. And you use AOL Messenger to talk to her. So hence, Emily is Away. And each chapter of the game, like, the game you can beat in like an hour. Because it's just point click, point click, point click. And it starts off in like 2004, I want to say. And it's cool because every time you start a new chapter, you have to pick on icons that show like what was popular at the time. So it's like, oh man, look, there's the Linkin Park thing. There's a Justin Timberlake icon. There's a Green Day, American Idiot icon. So it's like this wave of nostalgia and you're sitting there. It's like, okay, I'm going to try and chat up this girl. We're apparently friends and we're going to go to a party together. And you work through the story. About halfway through the game, you hook up with Emily in college because she admitted that she really liked you back in high school and she had a really bad relationship. And as you go on through the game, it's like Emily realizes like all she has all these emotions and she's like, were you using me back in when we met in college? I really had feelings for you. And it's like, but I'm back with this asshole now and you really don't like that dude. And towards the end of the game in that final chapter, you're trying to talk to her still. It's like you click on all of the dialogue options and you see your character write all these questions, like trying to admit his emotions to Emily. And then you just see the backspace. And then you just make small talk. It's like, oh, how's the weather? And it's like, no, I'm confessing my love. I'm trying to confess how sorry I am. How's your homework going? What are your plans for this weekend? And Emily's like, all right, well, this isn't going well. I'm leaving. And then she logs off and you don't talk to her ever again. And it's like, oh, it's kind of like the thing. You just sit down and it's like, God, no matter how much you try, there is no happy ending in this game. And then they actually released a sequel last year, Emily is Away 2.
Huh.
T-O-O. I haven't played that one yet. But it was just like this game, and I'm just sitting there thinking about it. It's like, I'm thinking back on like all of my high school friendships and relationships and like, you know, how hard I try to reach out or how hard they try to reach out. It's like that eventual dissolving feeling. And it's like, wow, man, like I really just needed a game that taught me like, sometimes no matter what you do, you're never going to get what you want. Sometimes there really are no happy endings. And I learned that from an AOL chat client. And it again, is like this really weird wave of nostalgia as I'm like, oh, do you listen to Coldplay? I'm like, fuck no, I don't. But for you, Emily, I'm going to try and impress you.
Oh, God, that reminds me of one of my favorite Daniel Tosh jokes. Do you listen to Coldplay? Am I a boring white guy? Hell yeah, I do.
Yeah. And then the other game came out last year, Firewatch. It came out in a genre that I call walking simulators.
Yeah. I consider those like experiences.
Yeah.
Not so much like games.
Yeah. So it's like
it's using the video game format to create an experience and tell a story.
Yeah, and I love those games. Even something like as outrageously depressing as That Dragon Cancer.
Oh God, that game broke me.
That game
destroyed me.
That Dragon Cancer is about a 12-month-year-old who got diagnosed with cancer, and about the parents dealing with it. Yeah, it's literally
the father just trying to cope with
his and then son's people shit death. On him, and it's like, oh man, this isn't a game. It's like it's not. It's
his real way life. That he dealt well, with shit.
It was made for other parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was supposed to be a way that when, you know, if your child ever got diagnosed with cancer, God forbid, this is a way you can cope. Like you can learn to cope with this. It wasn't meant to be like the next AAA groundbreaking game.
Yeah, No Man's Sky.
It was supposed to be a way to cope.
Yeah, and so, you know, That Dragon Cancer and Firewatch are also that same thing. It's like you play the game, you make all these choices, and then you're just kind of stuck. Like you are in this kind of limbo of humanity and living to learn with all of your consequences as your character progresses through Firewatch. You know, you're looking for this lost child, and it's like just like this emotional stability where your main character is sitting there and it's like he's reflecting back on all of his life experiences, realizing he may have been an asshole at one point, depending on your choices, or like, oh my God, I miss her so much. And then you find what you've been looking for in the whole game. And it's like this huge wave of self-reflection. And plus the game is just pretty to look at. Like, you know, sometimes when I play those like super emotional games, I just have to shut down. I'm like, I don't want any more emotion. I don't want any more narratives. I don't want any more story. I'm going to go play Minecraft for 6 months. Like The Last of Us destroyed me that way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like games like Emily is Away, That Dragon Cancer, or Firewatch were part of like this really unique experience of walking simulators or point and click adventures that bring in nostalgia, but at the same time tell really unique stories that you can experience because, oh, hey, you're human too.
Right. I think I honestly think like Kojima was way ahead of his time when he started, like the way he made Metal Gear and like the story about like with everything to it. Just because he was always a big film person and he always wanted to make movies, so he used video games to pretty much do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that all the time now. It's like, oh, these more like cinematic experiences with video games, like with The Uncharted and Last of Us. Like, Last of Us is like playing a movie. Like, yeah, there's some inner between cutscene and stuff, but really all you care about is the story for that one.
Yeah, I mean, there are games like, yeah, I play this game for the game. Like, I play Halo because I know what I'm walking into, what to expect. But then you have those titles out there that are more of like a narrative experience. Like, man, The Last of Us had some clunky controls sometimes, but I'm primarily there for Joel and Ellie. Like, you know, the whole Master Chief, it's like, oh, we have to find Cortana. Like, cool. The three of us all play that together. That's where our chat client came from, of Heroic Chat, partially, because we also watch superhero shows together. And it's like, yeah, we're going to play Halo, and we're going to figure this out together, boys. And then we're fucking killing each other on the final level as we try to race to Cortana.
Yeah, it's like, touch this button. Stab. She's mine. Shotgun. No, stab. It was just 10 minutes of us shooting each other, and then just... fuck it.
Didn't one of us have like a warthog too that was just like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I want to mention this. In the final year of Emily is Away, 2006 is their final year of college. Both the main character, you and Emily, have grown apart. Emily is dating asshole character again. And the player feels like they lost their friend because of Emily. It's like, oh man, this Emma girl that I like hanging out with, but I want to make a good picture for Emily. And it's like, man, we're only getting snippets. It's like this one time that we chat together in 2006. And it's like, the game goes, as the conversation comes to an uncomfortable and cold finish about your feelings for each other, the character begins to revise sentences asking if the two will ever be the same, deleting earnest questions and asking about the weather or other mundane affairs instead. Despite the protagonist's obvious feelings for Emily, she no longer cares, and as a result, they say goodbye. For the first time, the character is the one who leaves the conversation, logging off. Alternative, if the player chooses not to talk things over in 2005, Emily will refuse to talk at all in 2006, stating she is too busy, and your character is the first one to leave the chat. Yeah, it's crazy, because it's like, what was funny is that now the game takes place in 2006, you know, the game comes out last year, and now you can talk to two people at the same time.
What?
And the game includes parodies of websites like YouTube and Newgrounds that your characters talk about.
Oh, Newgrounds.
So again, it's waves of nostalgia going over with this underlying story. Like, it creates just such a weird and unique experience for me. Because again, it's game-changing, literally.
Is there any, like, comics you can think of that made you, like, go, wow, comics can actually do really cool things?
Every comic that I touch, I read. American Born Chinese really did that for me, because I was in that same place as an American born Filipino, I suppose. And it's kind of like the whole clash of two cultures, one culture dominating over the other, and trying to find a unifying peace within your life about it while dealing with all these, like, minor racism things. And it's like, oh man, this really feels for me. Or something like Sean Tan's graphic novel, textless graphic novel, The Arrival, which I wrote my entire college undergrad thesis on it, and I teach this
and part of your DCC presentation on.
Yeah. Oh, you do pay attention to me.
I got you, boo.
And that The Arrival is a tale of immigration about the main character, the man, coming into the United States, leaving a desolate European country, we can only assume. And then we get flashbacks to the prior war where instead of, you know, Nazis hailing the streets or like blimps and whatnot, you just see these giant monstrous people with vacuums sucking up and destroying everything, or a dragon coming in and destroying the city. But if you look closely enough, it's like, oh, that's Ellis Island. Oh, this is New York. Oh, that's World War II. Oh. And it's just like this weirdly weird thing. It's like you bond with this character without him ever speaking, without him ever saying anything, without even a narrator. And you have to connect those pieces because, all right, going to go full on English teacher.
Everyone get comfy.
Luis Rosenblatt has a famous quote: without the connection between a reader and the text, the words are just meaningless black, or the things on the page are just meaningless black ink. So you have to become invested in both the thing, and you have to actually have that metacognitive status of creating some sort of connection, the text to self embodiment. Because if you don't give a shit about what you're reading, you're not going to feel for something. And without you, it's the whole Full Metal Jacket quote: the book without you is nothing, and you without the book is nothing. You're not going to learn anything if you don't actually care or give a shit. So yeah, that's my thing. Sorry. I tell that to parents quite a bit.
You throwing things.
Should I punch the mic next?
Might as well.
I wouldn't do that to you, Zach.
Not on purpose.
Steve, do you have any?
Even though my comic book reading is short, we three actually changed my perspective on things when you made us read it. Because it was, yes, it had like that action coat of paint on it. Like, wow, look at these mechanized animals and all of these guns and shredding people. And it's like, but it was really a heartbreaking story. It's like, not everything has to be superheroes fighting supervillains or things like that. It's like, it can be very emotional. Might just have to put a little coat of paint on it to get people to read it.
All they wanted to do is find home. They just want to go home. Was he a good boy? And then if you think about it on a more metatextual level, it's like, what do you do with your animals when you no longer want them? You have to put them down.
Not if you're a good pet owner.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, the people that get huskies because they're fans of Game of Thrones and then release them to farms and pet shelters because they're like, man, these huskies take a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They're like fucking toddlers. Their whole lives.
Dogs in general are like that.
Some dogs show up, but apparently huskies are pretty much like always.
Well, yeah, but that. Dogs generally remain at essentially like the brain level of a toddler.
My favorite age.
But that and then Green Lanterns. I talk about the issue a lot, but A Day in the Life is, yes, comic books are essentially mirrors of the world's anxieties. What happens when you tell, get like, down personal to ones. Yeah, what happens when you get down to the actual anxiety of a person or the actual mental status of a person, like, and how to cope with it instead of just letting it control your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some other books that I think of like Wicked and the Divine Saga, like, sure, you could have like these as prose, but it wouldn't be the same. Like, I feel like comics provide with, like, the way that you can tell the story with all the colors and all the imagery. Like, I feel like that was, like, a lot of the image titles I read, like, when I started picking up all of them, I think that was, like, really the thing. I'm like, wow, comics can really tell these really intricate and awesome stories. Like, and then you get fucking Black Monday Murders, which is this huge, complex, freaking crime noir, like, I don't even know how you fucking describe Black Monday Murders.
Demons.
Yeah, like money demons. All hail God Mammon. But yeah, like, yeah, there's just so much good content out there that makes you reevaluate everything.
Yeah.
I have to throw out one more. Not a comic, but a movie. Your Name. It shouldn't have had as big an impact as it did.
That's what the director says, too.
Yeah, the director who came out and says, stop praising this movie. It's not as good as everyone says it is.
You're the next Ghibli.
And I stop it. And I look at him like, that. Fuck you. You're amazing. Accept my love. Like, it was just so powerful. Like, before, like, yeah, I've watched Slice of Lives and the romantic comedy animes, but that one just, like, it struck a nerve for some reason. I still can't pinpoint it.
I feel the same way about, like, Your Lie in April and Kids on the Slope. Like, those are my two favorite Slice of Life anime, and they're both, like, really depressing.
But what about but, like, New successful. Game?
New Game's too happy. That's why I watch it. I watch it to cope.
And watch Hifumi use all of her energy to,
like, the first
say
time,
something.
First time I watched Your Name, I tried to watch other anime and just couldn't for a while. Because, like, it was that moment of, damn it, now I want to watch Your Name again. I'm watching this action anime. People are punching and kicking
it's
each other.
It's a Gundam.
Cutting each other in half. And I'm like, man, I could really go for some teenage romance right now.
I felt the same way about Sunstone. Like, I've already talked about it to length. But, like,
it's not
I don't,
me anymore. No. It's not me for once.
I know. It's just, I don't think, I was never so emotional about two characters since reading that book.
Volume 5.
The best news ever is they're making nanodroids of Your Name. Both Taki and Mizuha.
How exciting.
And they come with parts so that you can recreate the scene where they ride on each other's faces.
Spoilers.
It's in the trailers.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to spoil that movie. Like, really hard. Unless you're like, all right, let me bust out my notebook and break this trailer down in 3 minutes.
Scene by scene.
See, he's giving
clip
me a look.
By clip.
Yeah, because you didn't even need a notebook. I said I watched it, and within 30 seconds of me finishing, you're like, here's the exact plot.
That was on the podcast too, wasn't it?
Yes, and I wanted to drop kick you across the table, but I put a poker face on.
Well, it's like, Steve, you know, when you do this, the whole cover your hand and your mouth thing, it looks like you're trying to listen really intently. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm saying something that Steve knows something about. Like, you just need to do that more often for, like, really simple situations. Like, well, no, hey, Steve, should I add salt and pepper? And then you just cover your mouth. It's like,
Well, even when you were guessing, yes. I was just sitting there, arms crossed, like,
okay.
Not going to say anything. Meanwhile, I wanted to stab you. So you're like, yeah, here's just the plot twist.
I'll kill him. I'll kill a man.
It's like, I'm stabbing.
I have to do it. It's the way that I engage with media. Like, I have to understand how it works. And I just enjoy that. Like I said, trying to see beyond the lines.
Yeah. Oh, Nier Automata as well. That was another one recently.
Nerd.
Just like the fact that you have to play it 3 times. And that the third playthrough is really the part that matters after everything you go through. I'm like, wow, I don't think I've played a game like this before. Where every playthrough feels different.
Well, I would even say, like, some novels, like, I'm reading through
true.
Way of Kings right now by Brandon Sanderson.
Because you pick up on all those things that they finally reveal at the end. It's like, oh, now I gotta go catch all the little things.
Yeah, so I'm rereading it, and it's not even the second time rereading it. It's one of my favorite scenes, but we have a character who is part of the Royal Army, sold as a slave, branded twice as a slave and then marked dangerous, and he's being sold again to work as a bridgeman. And he's just sitting there, and he has these leaves in his hand, and if he swallows them, he'll kill himself. Like, they're poisonous leaves. And at one point, it's like, why do I even bother? I was trained a soldier so I could protect people, but my dad told me I should have been a doctor to protect people. You know, killing people doesn't protect people. Killing people is just killing people. And then he's standing, and it's like, you know what? I'm out. I'm done. And he walks to a cliff to throw himself off like all these other bridgemen do. And then all of a sudden, his little spirit friend, Syl, comes back. And she's like, Kaladin, I brought this back for you. And it's the same exact leaves where he was going to kill himself with prior to the story. And he's standing on the cliff about to throw himself off with these leaves in his hands. And then he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Throws leaves down the chasm, turns around and walks back. It's like, I'm going to make a difference. And it's one of the few times that I'm reading a novel and it's like, oh shit, this character actually has depression and the writer is showing it in a very meaningful way. And the whole chasm scene just wrecks me every time I read it because it's like, he's so willing to do it, and like he's lost everything in his life up to this point. And if him finding like a new reason to live was really awesome to see. And it's like, wow, even though all the shit that goes down in the world, I can find something else to help myself move on in life. And I'm like, and that was like, that was during college. I was pretty happy then, but like, it's just a really nice message to always have. And I tell my students this, I'm like, no matter what crap gets thrown at you, whether you hate me by the end of the year, whether I give you an F at some point in the year, you can do better. You can always do better than the current state that you're at. And you guys need to learn this. If you're crying because of me, brush it off. Show me that I'm wrong in some way, shape, or form. And the kids were like, oh, Mr., that's really weird. And it's like, oh, whatever.
You almost said your name again.
Yeah, whatever.
That kind of goes to the degree. I know I've talked about it, about 15,000 times at this point.
Is it your name?
Stop hitting the fucking table.
My Hero Academia.
Gonna just axe kick it.
I could watch, at the very least, the first two episodes of My Hero forever. Because it is...
But you can never become a hero.
Exactly. It is a minority. A very, very, very... very minority who was told
part
by
of the 20%,
less than that. I thought it was like 5%.
Is it around like
it's around 20%.
He said it was around 20
in the world.
In the world,
so, yeah, 20% of the world's population. And he's told by his hero that he probably can't live up to his dream.
Get fucked.
And then he proves to said person that he can be a hero.
In his own way.
Like, he knows that he doesn't have a power and he is at a severe disadvantage to everybody, but that does not stop him from trying to better himself, to try and better the world.
We watched, like, the first arc again this weekend because Kayla was in town, and she's like, usually when I talk about anime, it's really hit or miss with her. And I was like, oh, we're watching My Hero Academia again. It's Zach's turn to catch up. And she comes in and she's like, can we watch My Hero Academia? I'm like, yes, we can. Well, and then Steve sits down at the third episode and we watch the rest of the first arc.
It wasn't even the third episode. I sat down at the end of the first episode.
Was it the end?
Yeah, like I came down to get water, saw you were watching the end of the first episode. I'm like, well, I'll sit down and watch this.
It's just a good show. Like,
and then my favorite scene came on, the one I told you that was the scene that made me watch My Hero to begin with.
Did I tell you I tried to find all my action figure for Steve for his birthday?
No.
They don't actually make them.
Oh. Yet.
It's either get him that or a Funko Pop of it or a $60 statue of it. And I don't think we can recreate the scene with the $60 statue. We would have to be very gentle as Steve rocks back and forth. Oh.
Dun, 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 dun.
But yeah. Like I said, media is such a cool thing because it's always the writers trying to reflect back on the anxieties of the world. Which, I mean,
and
you pinpointed that, on that.
And taking that medium to something we haven't seen before.
Yes. And with that, I think we can actually wrap up the show today.
Yeah. I think it's a good
shout point. Out to Steve for showing up. You're the best, boo. Why'd you point at me? There you go. Do we just want to all point at each other, like Mexican standoff style? Steve's dead. He doesn't have his finger gun out.
Looks like he already died twice.
His buddy guns.
He's dead on the inside.
Or are they secretly hidden under the table already?
Well, you're holding your phone in one hand.
Or so you think.
And with that, thank you guys for listening to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast. You can come check us out on all of these platforms, and you can tell a friend, because if you tell a friend and they tell a friend, we can start a pyramid scheme. And then somehow you will get a timeshare vacation to some place you may never have heard of, because that's how pyramid schemes work. Yes. Illuminati for life. But if that doesn't work out for you, still tell a friend about us and come check us out on iTunes, Google Play, not Stitch Radio, SoundCloud.
It still gets updated sometimes. It's not good though.
Yeah.
If you can listen to it there, great. We appreciate
SoundCloud.
It.
Our website, even. And if you really like us, you can drop us a comment. You can drop us a review. Shout out to Mr. Gabriel Canada, who left us a comment on our Facebook feed last time. That was very sweet of you. We really appreciated it. Also, shout out to this one dude at Hall of Justice Comics. He was like, hey, I listen to you guys. And I'm like, Who are what? You?
The one non-Tim Husky who recognizes us.
I know. That's how I phrased
it. What was funny was you even pointed out of this. He recognized it from our voices.
Because we weren't talking to each other. We were talking to John.
Yeah.
So shout out to you, who's currently backlogging through us while at work. You're a really cool person, and I hope to actually get to learn your name. And then we can talk about you in the same way that we talk about Jim and Tim Husky. That dick. Love him to death. He's so sweet. And also, give us a follow, give us a like on our Facebook and Twitter platforms, because that raises our social awareness and social status. It makes the algorithm recognize us a little bit more.
Helps us to do things to bring you more content.
Yes. Maybe
next year we can be like the Thinking Outside of the Long Box people and interview people at DCC.
That'd be really cool. I would love that. And I think you guys, our listeners, would love that too. And with that, we want to wish you a good night and happy Labor Day weekend. Love you, Internet.
Well,
shout out to all of you pregnant moms out there. Today is your day, Labor Day.